Okay, and I have in the studio today Suzanne Zeedijk, Dr. Suzanne Zeedijk, who is here from Scotland for the Western premiere, which will be in Albuquerque, the Western USA premiere of The Connected Baby, which is billed as a heart-centered scientific documentary revealing just how emotionally connected babies are from birth. Welcome.
Lovely to be here.
Welcome to both of you. Well, I guess what we should say the time, say when the movie's going to run before we get into it and before we talk about it. So, Badgie, why don't you give out the information?
Great. Thank you so much. The movie is going to be shown from 9:30 to 12:30
on Saturday, December 17th, a very week from today. So right now, a week from today, we'll be going. And there'll be some
nice venue, too.
Oh, that's right. We're at the National Hispanic Cultural Center in the Bank of America Theater, and it's going to be wonderful. And we're going to have registration starting at 9:30 with coffee and tea and bizcochitos, and people will pick up their tickets, and then the program will actually start at 10.
Tell me what the movie, I know what it's about, but tell me who the audience is for this movie. Is it for people who are studying babies, who, you know, clinicians and analysts and things like that, students? Who is it for?
It's for everybody. It's for everybody who is interested in babies. It's for everybody who is interested in other people. And it's for everybody who was once a baby themselves. So it really is for everybody. Because although the movie looks specifically at the lovely interactions that babies have with the people in their lives, the wider context for that discussion is how understanding babies' experiences shapes the way in which we experience society and the way in which we can tackle a lot of the societal problems that we would all like to find solutions to. So for me, it's really multi-layered. It's understanding that babies come into the world already connected to other people and that the way they experience relationships shapes their brains and then shapes the life that they have afterwards.
It sort of reminds me of an article that I read in the Times that was astounding to me but made sense, that babies, because while they're in the womb, react to what the mother's eating, so that when they're born, they're sort of accustomed to whatever the diet of the family is.
Absolutely.
And I love that idea.
In fact, they react to more than that when they're in the womb. They actually can hear the sounds around them. So they come into the world already tuned in to the sound of their mother's voice, mm-hmm. their father's voice, their grandmother's voice, their siblings' voices.
Oh, all that?
Yeah, all of that.
Oh, I thought it was only the mother.
No,
for some
it's
reason.
All of that. As long as the baby can hear that and as long as they're hearing those voices repeatedly. So I know of some mothers who record stories and play to their baby bump every day, so that they really can hear the voice of the grandmother, even if the grandmother isn't present.
Oh.
But that means they also come into the world tuned into cultural rhythms, so that literally you come, if you hear lots of music, if you come from a family that's playing Hispanic music, that's different from bagpipe music in Scotland, babies come into the world already tuned into the rhythms of that music. It also means that they come into the world tuned into the rhythms of, say, domestic violence, if that's what's going on in their household. So to understand that babies are already being shaped in the womb by the culture around them becomes really powerful.
Well, and that domestic violence is something that has to be talked about, too, because among advocates, they talk about how the cortisone or whatever levels that show
cortisol
fear,
levels, yep.
That goes up when the sounds of violence are around, even a baby in the womb.
Absolutely. And that's part of the point of the movie. The movie
I didn't know that was in the movie.
Well, the cortisol isn't in the movie, but understanding why babies should get alarmed at violence, at shouting, at stressed voices. You think, how could that really affect a baby? Mm-hmm. And the answer is because babies come into the world already connected to other people. By that, I mean they come with brains that let them be interested in other people, that let them know when other people are looking at them, that are tuned into when people match their vocal rhythms and their tones, and they can tell smiles. So they come into the world with brains that are already active social beings. And that's often a surprise to people because mm-hmm. we think babies tune in about the time they start to talk. Well, actually, babies are tuned in before they are born. And when we realize how tuned in they are, then we begin to realize that they're tuned into anything they're experiencing, whether it's happy or safe or scary. And the fascinating thing that we're learning about development of the brain and the body is that babies' brains are actually come to be shaped by what they experience, because you need a brain that's going to help you cope with your world. That's what your brains are trying to learn to do, is what kind of world do I live in? And therefore, what kind of pathways do I need in my brain? Do I live in a world that's really scary? Well, then I'd better be able to cope with unpredictability. But if I'm coping with unpredictability, it means that I can't tune into other things in the world, because I've learned that I have to tune into unpredictability. I need to monitor what the door is like when it opens. So to give a kind of simplistic example, if you have a baby who experiences often getting hit once the door is opened, so say you have a parent who's drinking a lot and becomes violent when they're drinking. If a baby learns that when the door is open, I need to be on guard about what might happen, you actually develop pathways in your brain that help you to predict what's likely to happen when the doorknob turns.
Oh, but you're talking about afterbirth now.
I'm talking about afterbirth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if we're talking about domestic violence, and that's, of course, only one of many issues we might think about, mm-hmm. Domestic violence will, if it's happening shortly after birth, was likely to be happening before birth as well. Mm-hmm. So what I mean is you've got a baby who is already starting to tune into that.
Yeah.
But domestic violence is only one of a whole host of examples that we can think about in terms of applying this knowledge about babies being connected.
If the pathways are being developed in the brain, does that mean that other pathways that might be developed aren't being, that there's no room for them? You know, if you have that fear pathway, does it crowd out the happiness pathway?
Crowd is probably not the best way to capture. If you, I think of them as motorways in the brain, okay?
Motorways as a British term.
Of course it is. So if you think of them as highways in the brain, and what happens is that every time a baby has an experience, relevant neurons in its brain fire. So the most basic thing, so every time you sit down, you actually have neurons in your brain firing that says, I am now sitting. So if a baby sits a lot, then it develops neurons and pathways that help it to manage sitting or crawling or watching in sunshine, in listening to birds, listening to laughing voices, any of those experiences. Every single experience a baby has, we have neurons that are firing. So the question about brain development is which neurons fire together most often. Mm-hmm. So rather than thinking of it as crowding, if we think of it as strengthening. So if you have experiences again and again and again, it's the connections between those neurons that get strengthened the most. And that's why it's easy to think of them as highways, because we build highways for cars to get us places quickly. We don't, if we're going to go somewhere more slowly and we don't go there as often, we don't need a really fast road. Okay, the brain is just like that. We have pathways that travel very quickly for messages in mm-hmm. the brain, depending on what we do most often.
That's a great way of explaining it. That explains a lot. Does this come from your research, or what does it come from?
It comes from my research and lots of other people's research as well. I'm an academic and have a background in studying parent-infant communication during those really early years. And I'm trying to fit that knowledge that we have about the way in which babies come tuned in into a lot of other research on neuroscience that has really helped us to understand how brains develop. And so for me, if we understand that babies come into the world already tuned in and connected to other people, then we really get how social interaction is shaping their brains.
Mm-hmm. And should we talk a little bit about babies who don't have connections, you know, the ones that we hear about in orphanages and things?
That great example. actually all, if we think of them as all babies have connections, it's just what kind of connections do they have? And so we can have connections that are joyful. We can have connections that are scary. We can have connections that are disappointing. And so the babies in orphanages that we often think of as, and say, Romania is a really good example. Mm-hmm. You know, we heard a lot about babies in Romania who didn't have really anybody to take care of them.
Yeah, and they didn't have any stimulus, I thought.
They didn't have any stimulus. What they really didn't have was love. Because what we are really talking about here is love. It's really, what does love feel like to us? Does love feel safe and predictable and warm and relaxing? Or does love feel scary? And love can feel like either things. When we get that, we can start to think of as adults. Ah, so that means that may be why relationships often feel scary to me as an adult, because they are likely to have felt scary to you as a baby as well. Mm. Right. So what connections will have felt like for those children in Romania is incredibly disappointing, so disappointing that they quit looking for them.
Oh.
And if we don't have connection, it's just like your earlier story, Susan. We all need connection throughout our lives. It's the lack of connection in lots of societies, including America, that is creating a lot of mental illness, a lot of physical health problems, a lot of crime and violence. We all need connection to stay healthy. That's what it means to be human. That's what our brains and our psyches are looking for. We are the most social mammal there is. For me, the key message is to say that babies are as much human as all the other ages, and babies need connection as well. What's most powerful about babies is that their brains are developing to tell them what does connection really feel like. And so what we can be thinking about is, what kind of highways do we want our babies to have in their brains? Do we want them to have highways to safety or highways to anxiety? That's what we can decide.
And
as a society.
I should say that I'm speaking to Dr. Suzanne Zidek, who is here for the Western USA premiere of the film The Connected Baby. But what you were referring to is the earlier interviews that I was playing about the village for elders, and the connection that they need, that we all need when we're elderly, is the same as,
yes,
it's probably is just as powerful as what you need as a baby. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you came. I wasn't sure whether you grew up in Scotland or you went there, or, you know, what, tell us more about you.
It's a great question. I am absolutely American. In fact, my family lives here in Albuquerque, in the Albuquerque area. And when I was in my early 20s, I had always wanted to go to Scotland because we had family friends who were Scottish. I managed to get a job there for a couple of years. And when I had to come back to the States, I didn't really want to be back yet because there was so much that was really exciting to see. And so when I'd finished my graduate education and got my PhD and started really being able to...
So you went to Scotland to get your degree?
No, I went to Scotland for a job before I got my degree.
Oh.
And then I came back to finish my graduate education.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I did that at Yale. And
oh, that's right. I forgot that.
That's okay.
The
listeners won't know that. And so I was really keen to be back in Scotland. So I applied for an academic position and was able to go back to Scotland. And so have really spent my life back and forth between Scotland and the US. And then, of course, also able to make contact with lots of other countries, and especially in Europe. And one of the insights I think that has really given me is to think about cultural differences in the way we raise our babies, and also in the expectations that we have about how communities function and what families feel like and what really connection feels like. And so I really hope that that wider cross-cultural experience has helped me to think in creative ways about how any society can think about what it's giving its babies.
And so do you see the film as one of the creative ways? A film seems to me as sort of an odd outcome, and, you know, we usually expect some kind of academic paper or something.
I'm so glad you've said that. I've published lots of academic papers.
Oh, you have, and I haven't.
And I love that process. I love being a researcher. But I'm increasingly aware that there's all this really exciting research that stays in academic journals. And what I increasingly wanted to do was to try to translate that research to a much wider audience. Because when you can talk about it in ways that people feel like they understand what you're talking about, and it's not tied up in academic or scientific jargon, mm-hmm. which it often can be, because you need that precise language to talk to other researchers, but that means that the wider public can have sometimes trouble following it. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was to make that...
believing it.
Or, okay, if you don't understand it, it can then be hard to believe it and hard to debate it. What I really want is to be able to disseminate it to a much wider audience so that we can all think about it. Because it's interesting, it's exciting, and it's really important. There are things that is now in the scientific literature that has real implication for the way that we are taking care of babies and indeed each other in wider society. And so it lets us ask exciting new questions like, what kind of childcare do we need for our children? Mm-hmm. What kind of strollers do we need for our children? What kind of labor experiences?
The baby faces you in the stroller.
Whether the baby faces you or faces away.
Yeah.
And that can sound really cute. Really, can that be important? Well, all the neuroscientific information lets us really think seriously about something that we might have taken, we might have treated as kind of cute before.
Mm-hmm.
But if we haven't thought about it, we can't take care of our children in the way that we think we are. And that's why when you ask earlier, who is the film for, it's for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Badgie, let's talk about what's going to happen when the film's presented. Is there going to be a chance to talk about these ideas or
yes.
for people to say,
yes.
I had this experience that went along with it or didn't or something?
Absolutely. And I also wanted to say one thing before. I'll say the time again. The event is starting at the Hispanic Cultural Center at 9:30
a.m.
on Saturday, December 17th. And registration is free and required. So there is a specific limited seating capacity in this theater in the National Hispanic Cultural Center. And so to register, you can call 505-243-5437 and leave a message for Marisol, or you can email Marisol at nmaeyc.org. We're just delighted to have this opportunity to welcome people to this event for all the reasons we've been talking about. And there'll be some introductions and welcomes, and then Suzanne will introduce the film and give some context for the film. We'll watch the film, and then we will have an opportunity for people in the audience to ask questions, make comments, and have some exchange there. So it will be an opportunity for us to think about these things. And I agree that there's so much information in academic journals and research that's out there about the importance of the early years and the return on investment and the economics that's involved, as well as the well-being of each and every child. But that's not disseminated broadly enough to our culture at large and to our policymakers. And so this is a great opportunity. There'll be people there who are parents, who are caregivers, who are teachers and directors, as well as people from the business community. And we are delighted that Secretary Catherine Torres mm-hmm. from the Department of Health will be there. We've
Good.
Gotten an acceptance from her, and we've invited several other people that we're hoping that can attend as well.
Secretaries
and legislators and officials. Whoever comes, we're going to have a wonderful time to listen to this film, see the film, and be able to think about these issues and ask questions together.
As you were talking, I was thinking, in New Mexico, you especially, but all of us together, have done a pretty good job in educating legislators and other policymakers about the importance of bonding of the early childhood. I mean, I think they've gotten the message that 0 to 2 or something like that is the most important year, and that we need to make investment in that. But I don't think that we've said that even before birth, mm-hmm. that there is such importance, mm-hmm. and given examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've said domestic violence affects babies, but mm-hmm. we haven't said how and mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. And I think that that message is really important mm-hmm. to get
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the ironies of this film, in the context of the conversation we've been having, is that the film doesn't directly address any of these issues.
Oh.
What the film shows is how connected babies are. So the film contains footage of babies in the most ordinary of circumstances, catching sight of themselves in a camera lens, diaper changing with a parent, playing with a sibling. And it just analyzes and calls attention to how connected babies are. So our attention is drawn to the baby's hands, to the baby's facial expressions, to the way the baby's smile corresponds to the mother's smile, to the way the baby's body rhythms really move in relation to the people around them. And the reason we wanted to make that film is because I think that's a key point that's missing in our understanding, is that babies arrive already connected to other people. When you get that understanding, then the brain information begins to make more sense.
Yes.
The neuroscience becomes more interesting. So when I got to when I formed a collaboration with the filmmaker who helped make this film, we really found creative ways to try to capture it in film. Because when you talk about it, or when you read about it in an academic paper, you kind of have to imagine what we're talking about. When you see it on film, it's right there in front of you. Mm-hmm. And the kind of feedback we've gotten on the film has really been astounding to us. Just to give one example of a story, a mother who'd seen the film was at another meeting that I was at, and she brought her camera, and her baby was about 2 months old at that point. And she came running up to me and said, Suzanne, you have to see my pictures. And she'd taken this whole series of pictures on a camera of her baby's hand movements.
Oh.
And I said, really? How did you notice them? And she said, because it's in the film, because you told us about it in the film. I have my very own connected baby. And I realized she wouldn't have known that hands were important if she hadn't seen that on a film. So when you realize that something as simple as a film helps us to be more curious about our babies, and it's the curiosity that we need. What does that mean? What might be going on in her mind? What happens when I smile back at her or don't smile back at her? That babies become much richer, much more interesting people than lots of adults often realize they are.
Because they can't talk.
Because they can't talk. People often think, well, they can't talk yet, so they're not really doing anything important. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything interesting. All I have to do is change their diapers and feed them. When you realize that they have emotional needs of us and they're reading every single thing that you do as meaningful, then we begin to get these bigger issues that we're talking about. But the film doesn't speak to any of that. What the film shows is really joyful interactions. And somehow that is really touching deep places in adults. Jonathan Robertson, whose name I haven't said yet, and it's really important I do, because he's really the other half of this project. He's the filmmaker.
Oh.
And so I brought the knowledge and he brought the technology in a sense. And we worked out ways to really highlight baby's connection. And he really developed this technique of freeze framing, things like hand movements and smiles that really calls your attention to it. And I don't think we could have really told this story of connection as nearly as powerfully without video, and indeed without Jonathan's particular way of working. And we've now realized from the feedback that we've had really how powerful it is. And we are now thinking about making other follow-up films. So we think this is the first in a series. What's been really exciting for me is that not only are parents finding power in this film, but so are the much wider community, like legislators and police officers and childcare staff. So we've managed to really, in the most ordinary common of interactions, we've managed to tell this story that has both personal resonance and much wider societal resonance. And I'm both astounded and delighted at that.
You touched for a minute on the difference in culture that you've noticed, I assume from Scotland and United States, or maybe New Mexico. Could you just elaborate a little bit on that? And we don't have too much time, but
I can, and it's a really, really good point because it's one of the questions that I have. How are interactions between, say, Scottish babies and grandmothers going to translate to Hispanic fathers and babies? Mm-hmm. It's one of the questions about the film that I'm quite excited about. If I give a really quick example, in interactions with babies, Americans take babies higher. So if you say, yay, you can do it, you can do it. And as the baby gets more and more wound up, we tend to clap and encourage the baby to climb emotionally. In Scotland, we would take babies down. So we're forever trying to get babies to calm down rather than getting them excited. And your face has just gone, oh, is that okay? That's the kind of questions we can ask when we realize there are these cultural differences in the way we emotionally engage with our babies. We start to realize what we're hoping for from our children and from each other. And then we can start to ask new questions about multicultural societies mm-hmm. in a way that I think we couldn't have before. When we realize that those emotional rhythms, musical, emotion is music to the body. So we can start to realize that relationships feel different in different cultures. And I think it's one way of helping us to get along in the kind of world that we're living in. And can I also say, we can then start to think about how also do different cultures relate to the earth around us? That it isn't just relating to babies or to adults. It's also relating to the earth. It's all about love.
I love that. I can't wait to see the movie. Thank you for bringing it to us. I'm speaking to Dr. Suzanne Zedike, who is here with for the Western USA premiere of The Connected Baby. It's going to be 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 a.m. on Saturday, December 17th, a week from today, at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and that is in Albuquerque on 4th Street. And if you must make a reservation. I'm not used to places where you must make a reservation. So you can do that by calling 243-5437, or you can email Marisol at NMAEYC, and which is the
.org.
Okay. Yes, of course. New Mexico Association for the Education of Young Children.
And if you do email, leave your name, your telephone number, how many tickets you want. And, of course, we'll have your email if you...
And give us an idea of how big, how many people can you...
The theater holds 291.
Oh.
And the Cultural Center is very clear, no more than that. So.
And this is the only time.
Well, we'll see what we can do afterwards, but this is the premiere.
Okay.
And we should say it has premiered in several other places in Scotland and in New York. We're due to premiere at the Scottish Parliament on the 1st of February.
Oh, that's right. You said
but
that.
This mm-hmm. is the Western USA premiere.
And the DVD will be available for sale for a certain amount of money, and you can buy it there or you can order it from Suzanne's webpage at suzannezedike.com.
And we made it available on DVD because we wanted as many people to have access to it as possible, not just in screenings.
Great. And so we should spell Zedike, which is Z-E-E-D-Y-K.
That's exactly right.
Suzanne Zedike, no dots, all one word.
Yeah.